Min campus alihol. Miai Karsten Schwine.
Għalkom għal-program jħor fil-sensiela minn kampus għal-jħor, miħaj Karsten Xwireb, etnu qorbu, tmim din it-tillet sensiela u koll ma tbaqa ftit personaġġi karattri nies interessanti ħafna ma minna tbaqa għanna nil-taqaw. Il-mistiden tiegħi l-lum joħodna sal-Brazil u Pjata Kingel, kollega antik li ħeddimt miegħu f'okkażjonijiet varji minħabba riċerka tal-politika kulturali, speċjalment fil-qasam tal-UNESCO, u ġieli wkoll ħadimna fuq kamp edukattiv fejn samna ftit riżorsi flimkien. L-esperjenza tiegħu hija varjata, mhux forsi ċara mill-ewwel fejn kien qed sejra laqa' salih, però huwa raġel ta' ħiliet kbar u magħna ħjaqsam ftit l-esperjenzi tiegħu. Ejn isimgħu mela l-intervista ma' Pjata Kingel mill-Brażil. Welcome our listeners back to the program Min Campus Alihor. We're nearing the end of the third series, which is also the last series in this stretch of three programs, where we're connecting different people from across the world, really, through the valuable medium of radio, which is available 103.7 FM or DAB+, but also when the podcast is available very quickly online on the Campus FM website. That way we can really reach everyone. As the listeners know, the focus is mostly on the career path and the career development. And in fact, my guest today, who you already have heard about in my introduction in Maltese, Pjata Kingel. Pjata, I welcome you. Thank you for being with me on the show.
Thank you, Karsten. My pleasure to be with you again. Excited for this talk.
Yes, I'm glad because, in fact, what I wanted to say was it's one of the few programs I've managed to do with a guest from the Americas. We've had a few, but mostly from the Northern Hemisphere. And in a way, I really wanted to sort of have a, not a representative, because it's hard to represent a continent, not even a country, let alone a continent. But with your experiences, Pjata, and as you hinted now, we have spoken before, not only through the UNESCO network, which in fact has brought even other people on this show together with me, but also through recent collaborations we had on some project work, some work related to HR, but we'll talk about that later, obviously, by the by. And to start off, Pjata, I wanted to ask you, you do a number of things, especially today. You've diversified, and I've known you maybe for the last 15 years or so, and you've also in that particular period of time moved on and changed and adapted to the needs of the sector in general, not only culture and the arts, but also other aspects of HR. Management, conflict resolution, for example. However, if you had to wind back the clock and take a chronological approach, which is very many times what we start off with in this program, and then we see where we end up. Where would you say your first steps were? In which direction? In terms of family or influences or school or travel? What were the first steps in your sort of formation, so to speak?
So there was something very particular to my experience in my childhood, which was my parents used to travel a lot when I was a kid, since I was born, actually since before I was born, they already traveled a lot. So, both my father and my mother, they traveled to work, and many times they took us with them. So since very early, I had this experience with different cultures, and I mean, really, worldwide. I mean, it was, really every continent, I could say. So, there was something really funny also that when I was 14 years old and my sister was 16, we took a decision. We told our parents, we don't want anymore to travel abroad. We want to know our country. So it was, it was different because most of my friends wasn't used to travel abroad, but we had this, this different experience, and we wanted to know where we came from, you know.
That's interesting, especially at that age. When you're still 14, 15, 16, your teens, almost not wanting to, spring, and leave and jump away because you've had so many of those experiences, but actually saying, look, we've got our own country to discover, and Brazil, well, that's a big country to discover.
It's funny, in that age, we're starting to know who we are as a person, right? So, yeah, I think this relationship with our territory is usually very meaningful. And Brazil, especially which has this very strong identity, and way of living, our culture is very strong for us. So, yeah, that started to call us, you know, come.
Come and discover me, sort of. Do you remember where that sort of conscious decision by your sister and yourself, where did that take you then? Did your parents listen to your request, to your suggestion?
Yeah. Actually, then we started really to know some of the well-known sites in Brazil. There are many others that I couldn't still visit because it's really big. And, but I think that was an important moment for looking inwards, you know, like I said, understand who I was, who we were. And, some years after that, well, I'll just go back a little bit more to before I go forward from this age. So my father is a psychologist and my mother is an actress, theater actress. And so we had this artistic influence in our lives. My sister is an artist, visual artist. And also this approach of my father's approach on psychology, I think it brought us this, subjective approach to life. I don't know if you understand what I mean.
I understand when you say a subjective approach to life is that somehow you don't take things for granted and you don't take your role either for granted. That you position yourself within a particular context. So it's you as the subject relating with others and with your environment. Am I understanding it correctly?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it. Yeah. Because in psychology, you're usually open to the experience, right? A psychologist, a therapist is trying to be with you usually, right? So to understand you and to support you on your struggles and to try to find new ways on the conflicts that you might be living with. So yeah, there is this approach of being open and present and interested on on human dimension, on human on the human diverse way of being.
Yes,
I would say this.
Yeah. Which you already hinted at this before, and I guess we will come to it when we also speak about later about your sort of training and coaching work and support in terms of organizations, also with that artistic cultural aspect, which we already can start sort of glimpsing from both your father's side and your mother's side. But that positioning, placing of oneself in a context and being very aware, being very conscious. And then again, in the case where you gave us the example of yourself and your sisters of saying, hey, we need to take stock, almost position ourselves on this map here. It shows also from your side a certain degree of, yes, sort of subjective understanding and consciousness, awareness of yourself.
Yeah. And also another thing that was really strong for us was this experience with the diverse cultural, the contact with this diversity of cultural expressions, because we had this experience in many countries and many cultures. So at that time already, I mean, a bit before, I think I was maybe 10 years old, I started to be interested to better communicate with those guys that I was meeting in those voyages on those trips. For example, to France, I wanted to talk. I wanted to talk with them, so I was interested in learning French. So I started doing some French classes, and then the same with German. And then we were already studying English at school at that time. And there was a moment that I started studying Chinese when I was 12 years old.
Okay.
But then it was too much. That was the, you know, okay.
Reaching a limit as well of capacity.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that also then we'll come to it, I'm sure, because you've already been hinting at the importance of, to give it its full name, the protection and promotion or the expression of cultural diversity, which will bring us then to the UNESCO context and the convention of 2005, which brought us together in the first place. But there's a lot of awareness already on your from your end that there is diversity, there's a big world out there, and that somehow what can sometimes put us off and scare us, if it's an issue of language, a language barrier. And this is something even that many guests on the show bring up, if they've maybe lived and grown up in one or more countries and then maybe like that. But sometimes also have to overcome an element of fear, sometimes of frustration, because you want to know and learn and understand, but it's not always possible to do so to the required level.
Yeah, and it certainly can be scary, as you said, because I think this move that we made of wanting to know our country and ourselves has to do with that, because it can be too overwhelming to have this experience with so diverse way of living, so many. So you have to be well grounded also to deal with the different, with a different culture, right? That's a big challenge that we live today. How we get comfortable with ourselves, with our way of being, and can well see and respect and dialogue and learn with someone who's different or who comes from a different culture, right? So it's interesting what you mean.
Yes. Pieta, we're making headway into our program. Today, like with other guests, we'll manage to sneak in three tracks, not only two, as sometimes happens with the program. And therefore, to do so and to do justice to your choices and your musical tracks, and maybe also a little bit to know why you chose these, we'll pause a little bit to listen to the first one. However, can you help me introduce your first choice, tell us a little bit what it is and why you've chosen it.
Okay. So, I thought of really three songs, and they can be somewhat representative of my experiences in general. And I could say the first one, I would bring this very well-known Brazilian composer and singer, musician, who is Caetano Veloso. And there is this song, Cajuína, which is beautiful song. It's a poetry, and it's just, you know, just a slight it's just one music of his repertoire.
Yes.
And he does so many great things, and
yes. I think one of many.
One of many, yeah. And he's so representative of a culture that we have in Brazil, a high level culture. He's an intellectual and really is intelligent, smart, and strong. He faced a lot the dictatorship that we had in Brazil. So I think he's someone who still holds a flag of intelligence and sensitivity and humanity. So yeah, I wanted to have this one song of him, of his.
I think it's a good, as you said, one of many in his repertoire, but a good representative choice also of our discussion today. So let's listen to it.
Existirmos, a que será que se destina? Pois quando tu me deste a rosa pequenina, vi que és homem lindo e que se a casa assina do menino infeliz não se nos ilumina. Tampouco turva-se a lágrima nordestina. Apenas a matéria vida era tão fina. E éramos olharmos-nos intacta retina. A cajuína cristalina em Teresina. Existirmos, a que será que se destina? Pois quando tu me deste a rosa pequenina, vi que és homem lindo e que se acaso assina do menino infeliz não se nos ilumina. Tampouco turva-se a lágrima nordestina. Apenas a matéria vida era tão fina. E éramos olharmos-nos intacta retina. A cajuína cristalina em Teresina. Existirmos, a que será que se destina? Pois quando tu me deste a rosa pequenina, vi que és homem lindo e que se acaso assina do menino infeliz não se nos ilumina. Tampouco turva-se a lágrima nordestina. Apenas a matéria viva era tão fina. E éramos olharmos-nos intacta retina. A cajuína cristalina em Teresina.
We've come back to the program in Campos Alivor. My guest today on the show is Piatta Kiginen from Brazil. We're speaking about a number of general things about culture and expression and diversity, both internationally, globally, but also trying to get a glimpse and a deeper understanding also of the diversity that a young person, yourself, a few years ago, was going through, sort of a personal voyage to personal development, but in line in the context of almost a subcontinent, the Brazilian one, with all the diversity and the representation of it. So, Piatta, we left the younger you at a formative stage of shifting between the ages of 10 and 14, making a few choices, looking a bit inward, but within a large Brazilian context. What came next? Also with a view to lead us also to then what your studies and your further work led you to.
Sure. So some years later, when I was 16, 17, me and some friends, we decided to to produce, to organize a theater festival. Because at that time, I used to act a little bit with my mother. Well, I had this at home a lot. And yeah, we were young teenagers, me and my friends, and we wanted to do this event when we were at the college, at school here in Brazil, we would say at school. So we organized that, and it was a very intense experience. And at that moment, I remember telling myself, my God, I want to do this for the rest of my life, organizing these kind of events. So yeah, it was very strong. I could say it was my first step on my professional development. So after that, I tried to open a business on this way. But at that moment, I had to enter university. I was 17. We started to doing exams. And I remember at that time, I got a bit, I don't know if a bit lost, but a bit confused. Should I do this? Should I do that? I started to enjoy other things and to wanted to study other things. So it was an uneasy moment of decision make for decision making, right? So it happened that I entered for many different reasons at a psychology university.
Okay.
Psychology, how you call it? The psychology program, school.
Yes.
Graduation.
Was this in São Paulo?
In São Paulo.
Yeah.
So it was. It's a long university. It's 5 years, and after 4 years, these friends who actually one friend of mine who organized that festival with me, it was like 6 years before that date. He called me and said, "What do you think of organizing another one? Just for fun." So I said, yeah, let's do it. So I started doing this, and I found myself very excited with it again. And I remembered my dream of working with this. So I decided to stop university to, how you call it? Well, to
get like a pause.
Yes, exactly. I paused my studies in university, and I said, okay, let me experience that and see how it touches my heart and my mind, you know? So I really enjoyed that. And I said, okay, I have to come back to this. So I actually came back to university. I finished my studies. I graduated in psychology. And then I came back to work with an NGO on culture and education. So I started working as a pedagogic coordinator for social and cultural projects. Then I entered in the government in São Paulo. I was coordinating the cultural department of a big sector, region, territory in São Paulo. Then at that time we met in U40, which I believe you already talked about it in other programs here. So
there have been others of our friends in the show who have spoken about what at the time was U40, standing for under 40. Now time has moved on, so we can talk about an O40 and over 40, because we've all gone past it. Yes.
yeah, exactly.
Which is this network of sort of at the time like-minded young people who are involved in the field of culture, diversity, education, and in your case, really bringing together many aspects. And I guess even maybe some of the Maltese listeners, even at the University of Malta, while speaking, hearing you speak, will think of people maybe like Paulo Freire, because of the pedagogy in the field of drama and activism. But maybe even others might think of Jaime Lerner, the architect, politician, activist, who again sees very much the implementation of creativity in the way what we do has direct impact on the spaces we live in, on our own dwelling areas. Sorry, I went off a little bit on a tangent there, but your formation in the field of creativity, culture, and with this big strong root in psychology, really, really, I guess can even appeal to our listeners to find ways of following up the story in their own way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, but nice that you mentioned these other figures, Brazilian figures. And yeah, I think it depicts well this interesting aspects of the mm-hmm. Brazilian culture of creativity mm-hmm. and people interested in a better country or a better
yes.
Way of living here to face our challenges. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so really at that time I was working in a very local institution or organization, which was the local government in São Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
And I got connected with this group, the U40. So it was really a local and global experience at that time. And around, well, I stayed 2 years in the government and then, well, I think 1 year later after I left the government, I've entered at Santander Bank, the mm-hmm. private bank in Brazil, mm-hmm. and I've worked there for around 5 years on the cultural department. I was taking care of the projects, national projects, we call that, and the sponsorship program also.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very interesting to experience this part of the system from the corporate perspective, which plays a very important role in our cultural system today, right? Especially in Brazil because of the tax incentive laws, but worldwide also, right?
Mm-hmm.
So trying to get quickly to today, mm-hmm. and then we can deepen any aspect of it.
Yes.
I've left the bank at that time. I wanted to get back to my own entrepreneurship
mm-hmm.
Ideas. And so I did many different things from that time on. I've entered in the digital marketing realm because I wanted to bring some of my clients at that time, some of my artists' clients, to try to live, I mean, to earn their living directly from their customers, their mm-hmm. listeners, mm-hmm. their fans, actually. Because I understood that we were facing too many difficulties with government support or corporate or private support also from private companies. So yeah, I did some educational programs with them and we started offering this to their fans. So it was an interesting moment also to learn. And that was before COVID. So mm-hmm. at that time, we didn't have so many live events on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, online live events, right? So it was interesting to learn that. And I kind of became a digital nomad mm-hmm. at the time. That's when we met there in Malta.
As well. That's right.
I was working from everywhere. I was traveling and working by mm-hmm. internet. So coming to the recent years, when I was in the bank, in Santander Bank, I went to Harvard Business School to mm-hmm. do a course on leadership. And I have enjoyed so much a method that they work with, mm-hmm. they work with, they called True North Group. It was a way of dialoguing between a group of 5 to 8 people mm-hmm. and kind of one helping the other on solving some challenging situations that each member could be living with, being it a personal or a professional challenge. So when I came back, I wanted to offer this in Brazil. So I started offering this some years ago And that took also myself to the conflict mediation course that I've done last year.
And I must say, I was really happy to be involved on the receiving end of your conflict management and mediation course. I remember in particular use of branching out and testing different things. Also, I believe, taking on different experiences you had in civil society, government, the private sector, and also yourself as an entrepreneur. And for example, tackling different aspects of work, dynamics. Through, I remember going through my notes as well before this program, I remember the U theory, for example. So that's the U again coming in. Maybe there's something special with this particular letter in your case, and the different steps that one can go through. I don't know if very briefly, Pietà, before we stop for another musical break, you could just tell us something brief about this technique or the spirit of trying to address conflict in the workplace, especially in dynamic and diverse environments.
Okay, so very briefly, it's a method that is taught by a consultancy, German consultancy called Concadora, and that has this partnership in Brazil with two institutions. One is Instituto Ecosocial, and another one is Batcherri Consultancy. And this method has two main main sources of knowledge of approach. So one comes from the nonviolent communication from Marshall Rosenberg, which has a very particular and potent approach, which comes from the existentialists. Psychologists like Carl Rogers and Martin Buber and others, but Marshall developed a very specific way of doing it. Well, he created this approach, which he called nonviolent communication. And in the other side, the anthroposophists, which leads to Rudolf Steiner and others who worked with and developed its ideas and practices based on this approach to human being. So Otto Scharmer developed this method called U theory, which we can think of really the letter U, as you said, interesting, that comes to my life often, which is in a very simple way. It's like you start in the the left side of the letter. You can see the letter U graphically. It's something that you can start in the left part and the upper part of the U. And then you go down, you dive. So it's kind of, you really dive into your emotion, your thoughts, your emotions, and your desires or your wantings, your needs. And then when you identify your needs and these needs, it's really important to get clear what we mean when you say needs, because needs, when we say needs, we think of Maslow's understanding of needs, which universal needs, a need for protection, a need for expression. So it's really basic. Sometimes we get confused there and we think, oh, I have a need of eating a chocolate. Okay, so maybe that's not really a need. That can be a strategy to meet another need, which can be to be well fed, right? To be hungry, But it can be also affection. We eat chocolate sometimes because we are needing some affection or some calmness or some pleasure in life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the very crucial moment when we identify the needs. And when we get clear all the needs from all participants involved in this mediation, then we can start thinking of strategies, of ways of making these needs met in a creative way, right? We can think together about it, which ways could better meet those needs. So basically that's the process, and then we make decisions, and then we go try to put those in practice.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically that's
very
it.
Very good and succinct and concise explanation, Piotr, which somehow again repeats, it's interesting, also in a reflective mode, which today's program is very much linking to the cultural expressive field, but also with the reflective psychological one. An itinerary, a path, a trip. We started off with the voyages around the world your family took you on for a number of years, but this is also sort of the personal path, which in fact is very much even the core of this series. I'm trying to understand how people take certain choices and go down certain routes rather than others, and sometimes how it's planned, but how many times it's not. But it's maybe there's a deeper planning process going on, not a very, very conscious one. Because time is pressing, I just would like to ask you whether you want to add another point, because I understand that you do. And then maybe introduce the second song we will listen to.
Great. Yeah, just to fully answer your question, this is a method that can be used on personal level or with a marriage, for example, couple, or with friends, or with neighbors, or with a community, or with two countries in conflict with each other. So it can be applied in a very diverse
mm-hmm.
context. Very diverse.
Yes, and can be very micro or really, really on a large scale. Again, linking the local with the university, really.
Yeah.
So while we mull over what we've been talking about, let's listen to the second track. What will it be, Piotr?
Okay, so nice that we got to this conflict mediation part here, because this song, I was really thinking a lot about which one would be the second one, but I like this song because it's a song that I heard in Nepal, in Kathmandu's streets. It's a song that came to be very, very popular, and maybe almost every tourist that went to Kathmandu maybe have heard it. And it's like a meditation. It's a very oriental song. It's kind of a mantra. And it has to do with this part of peace, of getting in contact with our inner part. And yeah, that's it. That's what I can say about it.
Let's listen to it then. Almost a shame to interrupt that meditative approach, as you very rightly described it. Piata Kiginel, my guest today on Min Campo Salihor, connecting very much not only formal, administrative, academic spheres of academia and studies, as we do in these programs, we sort of go even beyond the formal setting of education and self-development between campuses, but also going into other areas, both very, very deep down inside ourselves, but even on an international level. And through yourself, Piata, we're really managing to have this very interesting itinerary, trying to bridge these different elements. And we're down to the last less than 10 minutes now of our conversation, really. But one question which I think sort of rises naturally from our conversation is that while on the one hand there is a lot of reflection, also a lot of studying, a lot of practice that one needs to carry out. You mentioned a number of institutions, a number of consultancy firms, a number of institutions also in higher education and university. Some of which may be not so known to our audience, but others which sort of will resound. However, as you said as well, certain models approaching conflict resolution, for example, have very practical approaches to them. They can be applied to very practical situations. And I think our listeners might wonder whether there could be a few examples you could give on how maybe you actually went through an experience of practicing your skills in this field and actually seeing maybe some changes, some developments, obviously without having to mention names and go into particular details. But could we maybe make a bit more concrete our reflection up till now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as I said, it can really be applied to many, many different situations. But I can give one specific example where when we are in conflict, what I understand is that really what's not being what's not being clear in the relationship between the two parts is really the difference between the strategies, as I mentioned before, and the basic needs that are not being met by the ones who are in conflict. So when we say that thing that we are that we are repeating a conflict, that we're trying to solve it, but we are not being able to solve it, and it's taking us long, and it's taking it's dragging our energy down, and maybe it's because we are stuck. We are really we did put in our mind that the solution to this situation is on that way. And we stop focusing on what our needs are and what the other needs are, because if we see that, we will probably have a wide range of possibilities to meet these needs and not only by that first path that you were thinking of. So for example, a conflict within a couple, mm-hmm. right? I've been working with someone. I have worked with someone actually last year. What I could see is that we start, just to show a bit of the process, we mm-hmm. start to ask both sides how they see the conflict. What is the conflict that mm-hmm. they're reliving? So we start already to have a common point of view there. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is the issue. So let's look at it. So we already start to create some connection, yes, when we just ask this question, right? So in the second moment, we ask for the point of view of each part. How do you see? How do you judge? We really mm-hmm. want to hear the judgment of each one, so that you can express what you think about it. And at this moment, we just ask for each side to repeat what the other person said, mm-hmm. just to check if you really understood it, and the other one can correct if you said something which is not really mm-hmm. accurate. And this way you also feel that you have been listened to. Yeah. Okay, the other person just simply listened to me. That's already mm-hmm. something that helps to calm down the conflict, you know, mm-hmm. and to start to get some connection, even though we're not asking them to agree on anything, yes, at this moment. And then we start to see, okay, there are two point of views, but we are starting to listen to each other. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. we go down to our feelings. Okay, so at this situation, how do you feel? And then we go, it's a deeper moment, sometimes right. a difficult moment. Mm-hmm. But if mm-hmm. we go slowly, we can get in touch with our feelings there. And the other part we usually feel when the other parts express their feelings. It's mm-hmm. natural. It simply reverberates in our body.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we start to understand this feeling, get in touch and expressing this, we get a deeper connection with both parts with the help of the mediation, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The mediator. And then after that, when we really understand the feeling, we go to the needs, and because the feeling is a highlights what is lacking, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel sad. Okay, why you feel sad? Because what's lacking to you? What needs of yours are not being met? So yeah, I'm sad because I really need some understanding,
yeah,
or yeah. I need some more contact with mm-hmm. the other
and somehow being able to articulate it as well. So that's a subjective perspective you spoke about at the very beginning of this interview, which is now coming to a close, reappears again. So really mm-hmm. trying to focus on and work through those basic yeah. needs or even complex needs that the people you work with can express.
Yeah. So basically this is the process. And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in this case, for example, that's the first you start really with different points of view, clashing with each other. But when you start doing this process, people start getting soft, mm-hmm. you know, softer and more open to the other and more open to yourself. Sometimes you're not open to assume what you're feeling or yes, needing, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think this is mm-hmm. this is one example.
Yes, Peter, I think with that one example, you manage well. It worked with me, and I'm sure our listeners will have going through a similar experience of trying to really understand and figure out in more practical ways how such a process definitely takes time and can be explained in a few minutes conclusively, but sort of which parts can lead to such a process. We've come towards the end of our interview today. my guest, I remind our listeners on Campus FM, is Piatta Kingel from Sao Paulo, Brazil. But to conclude, let's have a last couple of comments from you, Piatta. The first one being something I know is very important because it's related to your here and now and your foreseeable future. So to conclude this perspective look at your career development, let's hear a little bit about where you are now. Can you tell us something about where your current steps and maybe even your future steps are taking you?
Sure. So we talked a lot about conflict mediation, which is something I am into, and I have been offering this service. And but I'm also working as a consultant for cultural management, as a cultural manager for different organizations, writing an ebook on cultural marketing. And I have just started a new job at the Jewish Museum from São Paulo, which is being directed by a great friend of mine, Felipe Arruda. And there is this great team also really involved with this initiative, and it's been fantastic to be part of it. So yeah, I'm having this both, these two, these two activities, the conflict mediation and the cultural management.
Mm-hmm. It sounds very exciting and interesting, Piatta. And we could even say more about that, but unfortunately, we're really towards the end. But before we do so, we want to manage to fit in a third tune, which sometimes we do on this series, when especially guests want to sort of even add to their personal anecdotes through the musical perspective. And being in touch with you from Brazil, one has to go again back to music. And your third tune, with which we will conclude the program, is really, really interesting, not only in the tune itself, but also who sings it. So can you tell us something brief about it?
Sure. So to this, the third music is the music of one of the sons of Caetano Veloso. So the next generation. And so that seems a nice way to end our talk. With this, by listening to this next generation. And, this music is called Todo Homem. It's a beautiful song. For those who doesn't understand Portuguese, you can find the lyrics on the internet. And, well, the real translation would be, every man in Portuguese, Todo Homem. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes, and what you described to me while we were listening it together before, you said the refrain says something like "Every man needs his mother." So I think it sort of really connects the maybe Brazilian Latin spirit with even a Mediterranean perspective of growing up, but always relating to one's mother at the end of the day. So exactly. Thank you very much, Piatta, for that, for the conversation. And all the very best with your current and future projects.
Thank you, Karsten. A pleasure to be with you. All the best.
توصل لي ديك الانترفيستا مع بياتا كينجل من البرازيل وجبتكم كنا مخفنا مش نشتارلو في ديك الانترفيستا برسبكتيفي تياو فوق فريد فاري ونسب حطو كل غوست بالموزيكا اللي يازلنا نسدينكم عليك بيش تلتقاو مع مستدان جديد الجمال ديحلا في السنسيلة من كامبوس أليهور صحيح